Hey, are you ready to get back to the hearing?
Yeah. You know, it seems kind of odd that so few committee members showed up. You know, I guess companies aren't the only places it's hard to get folks to care about data.
Well, they'd care if they knew. And that Senator Ostick guy is a real piece of work. Sounds like he's stuck in the 1980s.
Hey, what's wrong with the 1980s?
Hit play.
Okay.
I too appreciate the time we spent speaking in my office last week. I found your approaches to data to be refreshingly forward-thinking. In your brief, you talked about data table stakes and some non-traditional dimensions of data governance. Can you please explain those?
Yes, Senator, and thank you for highlighting the point. First of all, I want to be clear. I am not suggesting that traditional data governance is no longer necessary, but we don't have to do it the same way we used to, especially with the potential applications of AI to data governance. Think of it this way: AI will accelerate progress, giving companies that missed the metadata boat the first time around the opportunity to catch up. It's like how cell phones flourished faster in developing countries than in the US, because those countries didn't have an existing wired telephone infrastructure. They ended up skipping it altogether.
Point of inquiry, Madam Chairman. Will we have a second round of questions to drill into this fairy tale technology? This committee and the American people deserve better.
Yes, Senator Ostick, we will have one additional round of questions.
Thank you.
You may continue.
AI is not a fairy tale and it's not magic, but it does have the potential to automate and simplify a lot of information management so that we don't have to do it by hand the hard way any longer. A lot of what might be called traditional or legacy data governance. But today, it's table stakes. It's necessary. But to quote one of the visionaries in this field, nobody is going to win a Nobel Prize for focusing on table stakes. You still have to do it. AI will just help you do it better, and it is an essential part of a modern data strategy.
Thank you. Senator Ostick, you may continue your questions.
Thank you. I'm going to keep it brief, Mr. Corporate, so that I can cover what I need to get to. I'd appreciate brevity from you, too. When Congress created this office, certain structural components were legislated. That included an organization and committee infrastructure. I see that you do not support the multi-level data stewardship and governance committees that ensure metadata completeness and accuracy. Is this true?
Senator, I support metadata completeness and accuracy.
My time is short. Yes or no? Do you support the structures necessary to ensure metadata completeness and accuracy?
Not in the way that you seem to envision them.
Listen, I've been in Congress for more than 3 terms. I sit on 3 committees and 7 subcommittees. Consensus and compromise. You meet, you talk, you reach an agreement, and then you publish it. Imagine if anybody could just create a new law whenever they wanted just by typing it into the Congressional Register. Your approach to metadata, letting anybody say anything they want about the data, will cause confusion and erode confidence because the metadata won't be accurate. I will ask one last time. Do you or do you not support metadata completeness and accuracy?
Senator, that is a mischaracterization of my position.
You can't answer the question about stewardship and governance committees because your first priorities are not completeness or accuracy.
Defining an overbearing committee structure is a reflexive first action when someone is told to do data governance. Just draw it up in PowerPoint. Done. It's easy and you don't actually have to produce anything except meeting minutes.
There is not a question
before this
witness.
We need to do
what we
can to satisfy those table stakes and focus as quickly as possible on value-oriented data governance concepts, on outcomes, training, and ethics. The accuracy and completeness that you seem so concerned about, but which rarely happens in real life, come from appropriately holding parties accountable, with feedback and input from the entire community.
The witness will suspend. The committee will recess and reconvene in 15 minutes.
That got a little heated.
Yeah, not surprised.
Me neither. There are long entrenched beliefs that need to be changed, and that's very hard for some people. Probably for many people. But hey, fast forward through the break.
Okay, back live, but looks like we still have a couple minutes.
Okay, this is John Ladley.
Oh, starting the show now. All right, I'm ready.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Time. Todd seems to be putting up a good fight. He's got the right ideas, and sometimes the hardest ones to convince are the ones that they think are already doing it, or at least that think they know how to do it.
It shouldn't have to be so hard. You know, the senator's right in his concerns, too. Completeness and accuracy are important, and data modeling. I think he just needs to update his thinking a little.
How many times have we said that on this show? Data is people. Data governance is people, too. Today, we'll hear from Laura Madsen. She wrote a book about data governance disruption, and disruption is what we're all going to talk about. Our chat today is based on an article from a January 23rd article from this year in CDO Magazine. Myself, Tom Redman, Anne-Marie Smith, Mr. Cruton, Malcolm Hawker, and Aaron Wilkinson all penned an article together, and the link is on the Counter-Threaded Productions website. A quote from that article, data governance as currently practiced is failing despite being positioned as essential for data quality, regulatory compliance, strategic decision-making. Data governance falls short. Time and time again, business and data leaders fail in their attempts to implement enterprise-wide governance. Why do we fail at something that just seems so important? This is a conundrum. But this is a common occurrence. This is in the realm of new things. This happens all the time. Most human endeavors where there's a change or a shift go through this phase, like total quality management. That happened in the 1980s and 90s in the United States and around the world. A lot happening with people saying, well, that makes sense. We need to build stuff better. It happened with environmental issues. It took two generations of choking to death before someone went through the changes to do some environmental controls. On the surface of data governance, there's a lot of supportive things, regulations and demands and supportive people. But then there's a lot that seem to be working against it, right? Knowledge. We over-rely on technology. We're not really sure what it means, but the people don't engage. We don't manage the people side. When you look underneath all of this stuff, you start to see the common themes of all other human endeavors that require change. In fact, you can basically build yourself a little phrase which says, in order for, insert your cause here, data governance, total quality, environment, we need to manage the people, ensure perceived value, manage alignment of organizations, etc., etc. We're going to hear this again and again and again. It has been said before. People, alignment, perceived value, managing changes. None of this is new, folks. I hope we start soon.
We're back at DGIQ East with Laura Madsen. Welcome to Rock Bottom.
Thank you.
So what are you working on? I'll tell us, you know, promote yourself for a little bit here. And I know you have a book out recently. Yeah. And you've got your organization working away. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So AI and the Data Revolution came out in July. So mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot of just talking about that book and some of the main sort of aspects of that book. And then Moxie Analytics is my company. I am a co-founder. And therefore, I'm a consultant as well.
Yes. Which is not a bad profession.
It's not a bad profession.
Our mothers should be proud of us.
They should be.
But they're not.
No. That's true.
Someday.
Yeah. Yeah. We have an industry that needs some shaking up.
100%.
Okay.
Yes.
So how do we do that?
Yes, we do. You know, I think that, and this is gonna come across maybe not so awesome.
That's our nom de plume is irreverent.
Oh,
here,
good.
You know,
yeah.
Say what
yeah.
you want to.
I mean, I think in many cases we need some fresh perspectives. We need some new blood. You know, I sometimes go to conferences and, like, everybody that is attending is, like, early to mid-careerist. They have enthusiasm. They think about things differently. And then everybody's teaching is me, you know, my age or older.
Yeah. You're not very old.
Well, but still, I mean, just
I'm old. Okay, let us just put that on the table.
But, you know, 25 years of experience is nothing to sneeze at this point.
No, it's not.
And, I mean, and it's, and you know, from a thought leader perspective, I don't think we're always doing our industry any favors. And I'm not necessarily talking about the three of us sitting at the table, because obviously we're having these conversations about what is it going to actually take.
Exactly.
You know, like, yeah, let's put everything on the table. Right. But there are some thought leaders out there that are still talking about stuff that we talked about in the late 90s, early 2000s. And,
yep,
and that stuff is no longer applicable to these modern environments.
Anything legacy is sooner or later is going to get automated.
Yeah, and it's the cost of doing business.
Well,
that's not going to convince anybody that you're doing something that's providing value to the enterprise.
Yeah.
So the question, though, is the legacy stuff no longer needed? How much of it's no longer needed? Are companies still not doing it after all these years? And we haven't figured out how to get companies to do it after all these years. I think they're finally realizing, well, didn't worry about governance, didn't worry about data quality, didn't worry about any of this data stuff. AI, love this AI. Where on earth did this answer come from? How,
right,
you know, and there's starting to be a connection,
right,
between, you know, data governance or data quality or just paying attention to data general. AI is a data thing. What's data?
Right.
Here we go again.
Right.
Do we have data at our company? When did we start having data?
Mm-hmm.
Why did nobody tell me?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, I do think it's an evolution, and we've lived through these evolutions, right? When I started, it was reporting, and then it went to business intelligence, and then it was analytics, right?
Right.
And then sometimes it was reporting and analytics.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was data science.
Yep.
Right, and now it's AI.
Yeah.
And so we'll just keep living through these evolutions of essentially a PR rephrase.
Right, the evolutions live up. You can't see this on the podcast, can you? Can't see me waving my arm up here.
Let the record show, Mark is waving his arms vigorously in the air in a circular fashion.
Anyway, so we've got the innovation cycle up here from the reports up. But we have this bottom layer, this
right,
what of the undercurrent is that's not changing.
Still the foundations.
The foundations that aren't there.
Yeah.
The problems we had with reporting are the problems that we're having with visual, the problems that we're having still having with AI now.
Yeah, yeah.
And this bottom part, we keep changing the capabilities,
right,
the interface at the top, but the stuff on the bottom hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Then we have the nerve to wonder why we're still wrestling with those same questions.
And
so
the question I have
for you is what are we not doing right, or what are we not communicating right? What do we need to do differently?
How do we break the vicious cycle?
Right.
So what do we have to usurp here? Yes.
So it's interesting, because when we look at the data industry and those thought leaders, all of us, in many respects, are still right now saying, guys, you still have to focus on the foundations. You still have to focus on the foundations. Mm-hmm. It's not wrong. We do.
No.
Because we have to be able to.
Absolutely. It's table stakes is what I call it.
Yes, it's table stakes. Yeah. It is the cost of doing business. There is no question we have to focus on the foundations. Nobody is going to win a Nobel Prize by focusing on the foundations, though, right? Nobody is going to move the meter, whatever analogy you want to live with. So I think what it really takes is a completely different perspective on data usage. Right, and for so long we have data leaders have kind of come up through the undercurrent of data, and so we walk in, and myself included, I walk in to lead some of these exercises, and in my brain is all the reasons why this shit isn't going to work.
Yeah,
because I've lived it for 25 years.
Yeah.
And so that's why I say I just think there is an enormous amount of value to some fresh thinking, to some new perspectives. If you are a CDO and you feel like maybe, you know, you are one of those people that's like, gosh, I, you know, for a really long time just keep living with all of these objectives and why this isn't going to work, then you should be thinking about how do you create almost like a product advisory board out in the business where that direction is coming from them, where you're not necessarily taking that direction until you can reset. I think it was Bill in the panel this morning, like, we need a mind shift change.
Mm-hmm. What are the one or two big things you're seeing now? What are the one or two things? The persona of our podcast is you're talking to a CEO.
Sure.
So, and I know you've got some good, strong opinions on where the leadership team's heads need to be.
How good they are.
Yeah. Well, so tell me one or two things that you want to say right now to leadership that you want to get out there, because Well, because whatever. Right. Yeah.
You know, I have, this year has been really interesting as we've looked at the data industry. I've seen a lot of layoffs, you know, big disinvesting of some of the data teams, data clients. And I think some of that is probably because of AI, where organizations think that it is more fully baked than it actually is.
Okay.
And anticipating that they can use some of those technologies to fill in some of the expertise associated with data professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I joke when the book was first published that I think the next 3 to 5 years in the data industry is going to be a bit of a dumpster fire as we all come to terms with whatever AI means for us.
Okay.
But if I were to be talking to executives right now about that, I would say you cannot get rid of the people. It's entirely too soon. And investing in these works is critically important. And too often we see that they'll put like one person in charge of it and then they'll give them a little bit of money or they'll put one person in charge of it and give them a data catalog. Or they will just really under-resource it. You get what you put out, you know, you get out of it what you put into it.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think that is so critical right now. You're not going to get out that world-class data analytics, AI, data governance capability if you're not putting that into it.
I chatted with my class yesterday about the impact of AI on the data business.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, normally in our audience, this is not CEO talk, but I do see potentially huge shifts in how organizations track, manage, you know, metadata, things like that, because of the power of AI.
Yeah.
So if I were to say to you, I don't think we'll have data modelers in 10 years because of AI. Do you think that's feasible?
No.
Okay. And why is that?
Well, you still need context.
You need context.
And
okay.
At the core, that's what modeling does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. If I gave an AI enough information across a whole industry, do you think that I could get 80%? Of the data model, right?
Yeah, I mean, and this is where we feel like, you know, if you get enough data, it will kind of create it's the learning,
yep.
Right? And yep. Versus the, you know, the trained versus the non-trained.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that where we often get stuck is particularly when we look at the industries. So I'm separating that out from those companies that are building AI to sell. So the data industry itself is like, I'm Jim Bob's Auto Body Shop, and I have a data team, right? That's data for industry. For the most part, we're still struggling with a lot of disconnected data. It's in silos. It's across the enterprise. We haven't done a great job of bringing it together in a repository. If we do have it in a repository, it is not particularly well organized to allow us to be able to actually train that model to be able to reflect back what we anticipated to be the model.
How organized does it need to be ingested into the model? It seems to me that could be a purpose of the model is to find those associations.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it could be. And actually, in disrupting data governance, one of the things I sort of postulated was this idea that AI can actually become a tool to quote unquote fix your data quality, right? Because at the end of the day, it's just statistics. Mm-hmm. You know, how many nulls do you have? What is your range? And be able to highlight where those data issues are, right, within whatever you call your repository. Right. But I don't think that in the short term we're going to be at that place.
But you also have a chicken and the egg problem there.
Mm-hmm.
Because how is an LLM going to know that the data is wrong? All it's going to know is that you've got A, B, C, and D. It's not going to know that it should never be D.
So back to context.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
So somebody is going to have to know something, at least for a while.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, context has always been the big missing thing in data modeling, data architecture, and all of that. And that is, I can do a data model for insurance company A. I can have a data model for insurance company B. Yet they're two different organizations, two different success, two different cultures.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. But 80% of that model is
that
a core.
80% is the core. And the 20% is really the differentiator, should be the differentiator for your business.
Yes.
So that's really the important.
Okay, so I got my CEO face on again, kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a CEO, and you can give me 80%.
Sure.
And I can lose 10 bodies. Those 10 bodies are wearing bullseyes right now.
But I would
because they don't hear the context part.
See, I would address it differently then. Say, I'm not giving you 80%. I'm giving you 100% of the easy part and 0% of the hard part.
So yeah. I'm getting value out of these people. Mm-hmm. So my next question then is, how do we adjust the thinking of data modelers, data architects, to be the provider of the differentiator? Because right now, they're happy as clams, just connecting boxes and arrows and doing that 80%. I'm in an insurance company, and I've done it for five other companies, and I'm going to do it for five more before I retire. And that is doomed.
Yes, 100%.
That's doomed.
100% agree. You know, we've been talking about this for a really long time, but at the end of the day, it has to come from tangible, excitable perspectives from the business. Like, you mean I can do this with data? They don't care that it's going to take, you know, X days, weeks, months to do an ETL and the data. They don't care about any of that. They don't care about
useless,
any of that.
Useless conversation.
Yeah. And we have to start thinking more like PR professionals.
But to get that business person excited,
I know.
They don't know enough now what to be excited about. And I call that, I don't call it literacy. I think literacy is a dumb word.
I hate that term. It's
competence. How do you feel about competence?
Well, data competency or data acumen are the two. And my our colleague, Dara O'Brien in Ireland, he uses a Greek word, data nous, N-O-U-S, which is Greek for common sense.
Okay,
and he said, that's really what you want to achieve.
But
so I'm going to submit, maybe anticipate an answer to your question, and you can agree or disagree here, is what we need to do to get that excited executive to break this cycle is give them some education. And they must accept that they have a knowledge or capability deficit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sound positive to you?
Yeah, I mean, so I like that. Does it sound positive? Because we cannot come at it
punitive. You can't say, you big dummy.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so the story I used to tell all the time in data literacy is I spent 20 years in healthcare.
Oh, dear. I didn't know that. Yeah. No wonder you're so smart.
So, I spent a really long time in healthcare. You cannot go to a physician and say, you're not data literate unless you're really good at ducking.
Yeah.
Because something's going to get thrown at your head.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, like, why would, like, it's like saying to somebody in data, you know, these professionals have spent all this time and brilliant people come to say, you're illiterate in, you know, finance. Somebody would be, it's so punitive and it's so reductive. But that's how we talk about it. And that is, it's just not true. I don't think data-driven was a thing 10 years ago when it became popular in terms of like truly a sea change, right?
No. Because heaven forbid.
I'll pick on myself. My second book is called Data-Driven Healthcare. I actually defined data-driven at that point of where what we were focusing on is action. You're producing whatever it is in terms of a data result to prompt an action that will shift behavior. That's how I define data-driven.
That's not a bad definition.
No, I think it stood the test of time.
Yeah.
The challenge is that you're absolutely spot on. It's like as a result of that, it is a sea change because behavior is not something you can't just, you know, one person's behavior changes and then you become data-driven. That's not how that works. And 10 years ago, it just was not relevant because data wasn't such a byproduct of absolutely every step we take, which is one of the reasons why we struggle so much to figure out where data sits in an enterprise, because it is a byproduct of everything that we do in an enterprise. So I do think that it is very much it has to be about a holistic perspective, right, of those changes in terms of the data providing a action that changes a behavior, and that requires a sea change.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I think, in conclusion here, because you probably have things to do, and you're tired of our mugs.
Because next thing you know, it'll be an hour and a half later.
I know, right? Yes, and we're still sitting here talking.
1 hour later. I think it's good that we have these talks and we don't run away from the big changes.
Right.
You know, I have the advantage of looking back over 40 years and going, you know, there's a quote in one of the chapters of my second edition, Governance, and it's a Terry Pratchett quote, and it says, revolutions are things that come around again and again.
Yes,
and
they do.
That's why they're called revolutions.
They're spiral. They're, yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. And we need another one.
Yes.
I think we need another one. Yeah. I think we've been too comfortable mm-hmm. with what we've been saying. I think on the business side, on leadership side, they've become too comfortable with data as a cost center,
yes.
with data as the lubricant of the organization right. and not the fuel.
Yeah.
But that means they have to go any change effort through a period of discomfort.
Absolutely.
And learning something new.
Yep.
But I also think, to wrap up, and please chime in here, I think our profession needs to go through an uncomfortable phase
yes.
too.
Please. All right. It is time.
No, it's not Muad'Dib. We're not going to kill all the sandworms or anything like that. But anyway, so I think that's where we are. And,
mm-hmm.
and we appreciate your insights on it, and we wish you the best. And it's a real pleasure to have you in this industry.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Mark. And thank you for having me on Rock Bottom Data Feed.
And thanks to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros. When you're all out of ideas, but you're still expected to sound insightful, fall back on Hubris.
Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. It couldn't be simpler. When there's a problem with the car, a light on the dashboard illuminates. It could be the tire pressure, or the battery, or the engine. Collectively, these are referred to as idiot lights. Dashboard warning lights were introduced prior to World War II, but the first known use of the phrase idiot light wasn't until the late 1960s. The term has a dual pejorative meaning, and they make the interpretation of problematic automobile conditions embarrassingly simple, and you'd have to be embarrassingly negligent to ignore them. Yet it happens. Frequently. A 2024 study by CarMD found that 49% of respondents had an illuminated warning light on their dashboards at the time. For 22% of them, it was the check engine light. But what if there was a check engine light for data? Well, it turns out that there is. Data quality. And most companies have been ignoring it. An effective idiot light identifies a critical condition, but it also requires an understanding of the connection between inaction and consequences. We learn that the dashboard light means something requires our attention. So it's reasonable to think that we need to teach the executives what the idiot light for data means. And we try. But executives don't have time to go to classes and workshops, so the education is delegated, and often through multiple levels. But executives don't need to know the details of data quality or data governance, they just need to understand that an indicator exists, and that ignoring that indicator will lead to future problems. The challenges many companies are experiencing when implementing AI are currently the most visible consequences of inaction. An executive should have the decency to be embarrassed by the poor quality of their company's data. Between now and next time, start doing something about it. Articulate the consequences of not properly maintaining your data resources. I bet you have examples. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. All right, we're back with Laura Madsen to play our famous game show, the Audio Data Rorschach Test.
So I'm going to play a tune.
Yep.
And you will tell us what that evokes in the context of your profession. Okay?
Yep.
That makes sense?
Yep.
Here we go.
What does that remind me of in the context of my data career? You know what? It reminds me of when a data governance program gets restarted.
Dashed expectations.
Yes.
That's exactly it. Dashed expectations.
All this enthusiasm and then blah, 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 blah.
And congratulations. You, win our game show.
Yes.
Yay. You get absolutely no prizes.
I never win anything. I'll take the bragging
rights.
Thank
you so much, Laura.
Yeah, I look at it the opposite direction. She wins all of the prizes.
Yes.
Which is nothing.
That's so meta of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez. See, you've been called meta and you have gray hair.
Uh-oh. All right. Well. Okay.
That means you are, you are, this, the younger people call us meta. Sometimes it's pejorative.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Traditional or legacy data governance may be table stakes, but you still can't skip it and play the value game if you don't ante up. Laura said it well. Investing in data governance is critically important, and you get out of it what you put into it. How is your organization's data investment portfolio looking? We'll continue our conversation about data governance next time, but until then, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about data governance disruption, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counterthreaded production, copyright 2025, all rights reserved.